We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
This is the RotoWire Audio Draft Kit. Here are your hosts, Peter Schenke and Chris Liss.
Hey, this is the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. This is I'm RotoWire President Peter Schenke, along with managing editor Chris Liss. This is a version of the podcast we're calling the Audio Fantasy Football Draft Kit Edition. You go to your magazine, you go to your newsstand, you buy the magazine, you download our draft kit at rotowire.com, you look at the rankings, you obsess it all. This is kind of an overview in digital form, you know, in audio form here, as you're driving around, you listen to podcasts, that kind of stuff. It's recorded on August 13th, 2017, and all the cheat sheets and everything that we're talking about are available at rotowire.com/Twitter. Chris, this is the second time we've done it. As experts in this league, we're probably like, what, half, two-thirds through our drafting season in terms of the teams we've drafted. A lot of news since the last.
I'm like four fifths. I think I only have one serious draft left.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a bunch more left, but obviously, most of our listeners to this podcast are probably picking it up for the first time, or maybe they've done like a league or two. We've done a lot. We did this a couple weeks ago. Let's start with some just real overall strategy. Any, you know, now that you've really gotten in the guts of drafting season, any change in the overall trends? You know, any trends at all you're seeing kind of in drafts?
Not really, right? I mean, because, you know, it's been a wide receiver friendly league for quite a while, and wide receiver friendly scoring the way we set it up the last 10 years with PPR and three receivers required to start, receivers are going early. But because last year was such a running back heavy year in terms of, you know, success, people are still taking running backs early. So now running backs and receivers are both going early. So there's not really, it's only receivers or only backs. Like it seems sort of like a best player available type season. And then the QBs, as always, are incredibly devalued. And that's not even a strategy anymore. That's just basic common sense at this point.
Yeah. Earlier in the draft season, I think we saw a little more going back to the running back compared to last year, which was crazy wide receiver. 2015, there were seven busts in the top 8-15, or five of the seven running backs in the top 15 of ADP were busts, and that was like a really high rate historically. Last year there were no busts, so people have got a little back running back. It's kind of leaned back a little bit. NFF NFC, National Fantasy Football Championship, which we're both in, and we have beat Peter Schenke or Chris List teams. It's about eight running backs, seven wide receivers in the first 15 picks, very, very even. Non-PPR, looking at my fantasy league ADP, it was four wide receivers earlier in the draft season in July and early August. Now it's up to like six in the top 15. So it's still pretty balanced. It's not as crazy as it was last year when it was, you know, 6, 7, 8, 10 in the NFFC sometimes is high in the top 15, but fairly balanced. So I think, you know, I still think you can go wide receiver early. That's a viable strategy. You're not going to have the crazy inflation of last year, but not as easy pickings as maybe 4 or 5 years ago when people weren't as hip to that strategy.
Yeah, it's not cheap to get wide receivers. It's just cheaper than last year because there's more running backs sneaking in. But what I'm starting to see, or at least feel myself, is when you're on the end, when you're picking, you know, 10, 11, 12, and then early in the second, you know, Jay Ajayi's already got a concussion. Devonta Freeman has a concussion. You know, Leonard Fournette has a foot injury. I mean, he wouldn't take him there anyway, but it's just pushing the running backs down. Like, there are now, like, fewer and fewer running backs that don't have some issue. And, you know, the idea of getting Melvin Gordon and Devonta Freeman at the turn is fine in a vacuum. But when you start to get worried about them, you just want them to stay healthy. And that's the issue with running backs. They don't stay healthy. And you see that some of them are already banged up. And it just drives you to like Michael Thomas and Jordy Nelson. I don't even particularly like Michael Thomas and Jordy Nelson as first round, you know, borderline first round, early second picks. But I end up taking those guys because I don't want to touch any of the running backs that, you know, they're not the elite running backs and they're already coming with problems.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously you touched a bunch of news. So those are the overall strategy things. Since the last time we did this podcast, and really the last time that if you picked up a magazine on the newsstand, we'll run through some of the big things that have happened the last few weeks. Before we dive into the news, I want to say that this podcast is sponsored by Yahoo Fantasy Football. Yahoo Fantasy Football is free to play and easy to use on desktop or mobile with the Yahoo Fantasy Sports app. Sign up today at rotowire.com/yahoo. Definitely check it out. They sponsored the podcast. Let's just go over kind of this. I'll run through some of the big items that have happened in the last, you know, 3 weeks of training camp. So if you got your magazine, hopefully it's a RotoWire one, but let's say it's not, and you're thumbing through the rankings, here are the big ticket items you got to pay attention to. First one, Ezekiel Elliott suspension. We put him on the cover of RotoWire. We were pretty confident that he wasn't going to get suspended, or if it was going to be two games. He gets hit with a 6-week suspension. How does that impact his value? How does it impact the first round?
Yeah, well, I don't think he goes in the first round. I mean, he has in some of the NFFC drafts, but there's an overall component to that, so I think it skews it slightly. I just think 6 games is too much, obviously, for a first-round pick. But I think late second he should still go, and I'll make that case if you want now or later in the podcast. But it definitely pushes everybody up one, right? If you take Zeke out of the first round, then now, you know, if Antonio Brown was 4, now he's 3. If Beckham was 5, now he's 4. And now when you're 11 or 12, there's just one, you know, one more guy gone before you pick. So, you know, it does push everyone up one slot. I still think you take Zeke at 10 games around where you take Todd Gurley, DeMarco Murray, that area. And, you know, because not only do you get 10 games of Zeke, really 9, because week 17 is not going to matter, but you get 6 games of the replacement that you have in. And you can't just look at his, you know, 10-game projection and say, okay, that's all the points he gets. He gets those 10 games plus 6 games of some replacement-level guy. And that, you know, when you add all those up, then, you know, he's at least like a Todd Gurley level player.
So the counter argument to that is the 6 weeks in my book are like the most important, right? I mean, fantasy football, you don't know what's going to happen. When he comes back in week 7, Dak Prescott could be injured.
Week eight,
because there's a bye. Dak Prescott could be injured. Their offensive line could be, you know, 3 guys could be down. It just could be an entirely different team, right? Their offense might be so terrible that they're down. I mean, their defense could be so terrible that they're down every game and thrown all the time. So, you know, 6 weeks is like an eternity. 7 weeks is an eternity.
Well,
in NFL, you know.
But at the extremes, it's not, right? So, like, say, you can go bet on a Patriots game then in December right now. So if the Patriots are playing the Jets, I bet you the line is like 13, okay? And if you think that's such an eternity that, you know, Brady may be hurt and, you know, and Belichick may have been jailed for something and, you know, it's week 13, you know, then just bet the Jets, you know, plus 13. But at the extremes, I think, you know, Vegas is confident enough to set a big line with teams like that. And I think it's the same thing with extremes with fantasy. Like, yeah, if you're taking like Dalvin Cook or Latavius Murray and hoping that in 6 games you can like figure out which one's going to be the guy, that's going to be problematic. But Zeke Elliott is the unquestioned running back starter, star of that franchise. He is going to be running behind at least a good, if not great, offensive line. It's been one of the best offensive lines in league history over the last few years. Obviously, they could all get hurt. It's likely someone will get a little hurt. It's not likely that, you know, two or three of them will all get hurt. Prescott obviously could get hurt, but even so, it would be questionable that behind that line he wouldn't do well. McFadden 2 years ago, there was no Prescott. Romo was hurt. McFadden still averaged like 4.6 yards per carry running behind that line. DeMarco Murray was a monster behind that line 3 years ago. So I just don't see the uncertainty being an issue. I see the fact that you're basically giving up, you know, if you want to project it out in PPR, about 9 points a week from Zeke down to Theo Riddick or whoever you use in his place. And, you know, that's a significant loss. That 9 points a week may swing two games. You know, instead of being 4-2, you may be 2-4. And that's the risk. That's the penalty you're going to pay. The reward, though, is all you got to do in a regular 12-team league is be in the top six. You don't need to be the best team. And then you get in the playoffs, and now you've got Zeke in the second round, right? So you already took Lev Bell in the first round, and now you got Zeke at the end of the second. That's pretty good for your playoffs. Yeah, and then even more so in like an NFFC style where you need to dominate, you know, where you can't just win the playoffs, but you got to, you know, be the best team. You could see why those guys are pushing them up even higher. But I think if you start to push them out of the second round, I think you're emphasizing the risk too much and you're not thinking about the reward enough.
So the only counter argument I'd make, and the biggest one, is that to me in fantasy football, the early games of your schedule are so much more important than the later games of your schedule. NFFC, it's a little bit different. There's an overall $100,000 prize. You know, you want to have that team that maybe just takes off at the very end to get you to be number one. I get that incentive. But a regular league, yes, you want to get in the playoffs. But when you start out, you know, if you're going to finish the year 7-6, I'd almost rather start out 6-0 and then lose 7 in a row or something like that, because you have so much more equity in your team early on. You're able to trade your players. Your team's doing great. You can make moves. You have lots of options. And then also you get to benefit from the middle to the end of the season when other owners aren't paying as much attention, right? You're on a roll, and then you get to play these teams that they start out 0-3, 0-4. You know, maybe they're not if not forgetting to set their lineups, they're certainly not out there actively like scouring the waiver wire and making trades and all that kind of stuff. So in most leagues, you have a big advantage if you start fast early. And when you've, you know, devoted a second-round pick or third-round pick or a big chunk of your free agent budget on a player who's going to miss the first 7 weeks, you know, with the bye week as well, or the six games, however you want to equate it, that's tough to overcome. You just really start off with a real handicap, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it is going to cost you. I mean, you can't project him like he's going to, you know, I would take him third overall if he weren't being suspended, and I'm taking him at the end of the second round. So I'm definitely discounting him significantly. And we say, well, you're only discounting him, you know, a round and three quarters. Well, that's the most valuable round and three quarters there is, right? Going from early seventh to late eighth is nothing. It's a dollar or two in an auction. Going from early first to late second is a $10 or $12 difference. It's a real, you know, I'm discounting him significantly for the fact that he's missing games. And I hear you. I mean, there's a psychological thing where the teams that do well get more attention. The teams that don't do well, you kind of tune out. But you got to draft Zeke knowing that you're trying to get to 3-3 in those first 2 weeks, right? You hope you draft a 5-1 quality team. And then with Zeke missing the games, you end up 3-3, because I think it's about a 1.5-2-game swing missing those 9 points a week, given the margins and the standard deviations. I think it's about that. I could be a little wrong, but I don't think it's not going to make a 6-0 team 0-6 or vice versa. So, you know, but two games is big, right? 4-2 to 2-4 is really big. So, you know, you hope you draft a 5-1 quality team and end up 3-3, or get lucky and go 4-2. Worst case, you hope it's 2-4 and you can get out of it when you get Zeke back. It may not be the ideal way to do it, but then again, a lot of second round picks bust regardless, right? I mean, Gurley was a first rounder last year, early second, but, you know, there's tons of guys, if you look at last year's draft in late second, they just busted completely. And so the idea that, well, maybe one of your guys is going to be bust for 6 weeks, not be available. Okay, fine. That's a risk. I mean, we can't treat like all the other second rounders like they're going to definitely hit. And so again, there's risk and there's a downside, which you pointed out, but there's also reward, which is when he comes back, he's going to be one of the most consistent, you know, for running back, no red flags in terms of durability, and running in one of the best situations all of football. So I think that's where I draw the line. I think the people who are waiting till the third, they probably won't get him, and they're just looking at one side of the equation.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm probably not going to be taking him in any leagues at his ADP, even if he slipped a little bit more, but I see the case against it. The other big preseason news item, Ryan Tannehill basically out for the season, torn ACL. They signed Jay Cutler. What does that do for your Dolphins rankings? You know, how does that change the players there? I know you were somewhat high on Tannehill in the passing game this year. With Cutler in place, how does that work out?
It's about the same. I mean, I like Tannehill because he got 7.7 YPA under Adam Gase. Seemed like he finally had a real coach that understands offense in the NFL, and it was, you know, it obviously showed. And, you know, Jarvis Landry, who was this dink and dunk guy, was getting 8.7 yards per target. Devontae Parker had apparently turned the corner this offseason, looks great. Kenny Stills got a new contract, still stretching the field. They signed Julius Thomas, who had 24 touchdowns in 27 games under Gase with the Broncos a few years ago. So everything was in place. Then Ajayi gets concussed, you know, then Jarvis Landry could get suspended. We don't know. He's got a domestic violence accusation now trailing him around. And then, of course, the main guy goes down, the quarterback. But, you know, Cutler played well for Gase in 2015 in his system. And I've always thought Cutler was a little bit underrated. I think he's the kind of guy that doesn't have a great attitude. And so when the Bears were a garbage team and the players around him weren't great, you could see him kind of sulking and not playing great. But with the coach that really knows how to get a lot of the quarterbacks and a guy in Cutler who knows the system already, he's already up to speed and these pretty good weapons around him, I actually kind of like Cutler. And if you're a total weight on quarterback person like yourself, Pete, that wouldn't be the worst guy to get when, you know, everyone's already got a backup QB and there's nothing left. I'd roll with Cutler. The problem is he probably won't play more than 12 or 13 games. He always gets hurt. But when he's healthy, sure, I'd be happy to take him.
Yeah, and he's going to go late in a lot of systems just because naturally his ADP and his default rankings and all that kind of stuff are going to drive his price, you know, way down depending on the system that you use.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so the other quarterback dilemma in the preseason is Andrew Luck, who had off-season shoulder surgery, not supposed to be that big a deal. It's a slightly torn labrum. All of our medical experts that we talk to routinely on, you know, RotoWire and write about him don't think it's a big deal. But at first, he's supposed to be fine for the beginning of training camp, shows up in training camps, says, I don't really know I'm going to be back. Maybe he's downplaying the issue. Now we're a couple weeks into the preseason. Week one, who knows? He's not off the PUP list. And, you know, there's kind of talk about, well, if he misses a week or two, it's okay. The Colts are having a rebuilding year. So the news seems to get worse and worse each year, even though maybe materially not much has changed. What are you doing with Luck? What are you doing with the Colts players around him?
So I finally downgraded Hilton because I just realized if I were to draft and it's in that second round and I'm looking at Brandon Cooks or Hilton, I'm taking Cooks, right? I might have taken Hilton before, but the Luck thing just makes me, you know, nervous enough that I'm going to do it. But there's kind of a good note that came out. I don't know if you did this note for the site, but apparently Luck's been throwing the football and his strength level's better than ever, according to his GM. And it says it's a regression where he's not throwing as hard as he would like to because they won't let him, but that he could throw it harder. And they're not saying unequivocally that he'll start the regular season opener. It'll be a borderline thing. But that seemed to be good news, that he's throwing and that he could throw it harder, but they're just taking it easy.
Yeah.
So that's better than him not throwing, for sure. So that news is good. I made Luck the number 7 quarterback right now. So I have him right ahead of Mariota, right behind Kirk Cousins. And, you know, it really depends. I mean, if you're in a 1 QB 12-team league, absolutely, you could go as high as 5 on him. If you're in a QB flex league, you got to drop him down, you know, maybe to 13 because you just, you know, the risk is a lot more severe and missing a game really costs you. But in a 12-team 1 QB league, a standard league, who cares? Just pick up Andy Dalton, use him for 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, so my thought process is, and I do cover the Colts, so I did write that note, and I thought that was, you know, kind of a good nugget out of there. I mean, it's kind of a mixed bag of news where they're sort of, you know, keep downplaying expectations, but then if you look at his recovery, even though we're not seeing it, you know, he is doing more, and he's not having setbacks, and they're trying to hold him back. So that sounds positive. It just seems so weird that they're being so coy. The other piece of information that I look at is that they really haven't signed a veteran backup quarterback. So if they really thought he was going to miss games, you know, they would have signed someone better than Scott Tolzien. And maybe they're just a terribly run organization. The new GM doesn't know what he's doing. But to me, that says more than anything that they think he's, you know, going to be fine, right? At least, you know, and maybe miss a game or two at most. And his price has gone down to the point where, like you said, you know, you could, you know, you can take him. I took him as what, the the stake league. I took him as what, seventh or eighth quarterback off the board.
That's where I have.
Yeah, and so you know, I think I even took him for less than that. Or maybe it was eighth or ninth. At that point, I'm fine. Whatever. You know, I mean, like if he misses three games, four games, five games, if he comes back to being the player he was, you know, I'll mix and match a quarterback in the meantime. I think the value really in a lot of these leagues, especially like the high stake leagues and that kind of stuff, is taking the wide receivers and in the Colts passing game, because they're going to get more, equally as much discounted. And even it's a little bit higher risk, high reward. If he comes back, those guys are all going to be, I think they're going to be pretty good. So, whereas there's in the quarterback market, you can, especially if you're in a flex league or a two quarterback league or something like that, where you really need the quarterback, then pass on luck. There's so many good options. But in the passing game, that's not quite the same, in terms of wide receivers and, tight ends and that kind of stuff. So it's maybe a better gamble to try to take some of those players and hope that he comes back and plays all the games or just misses one or two.
Well, if you're in a high stakes league like the NFBC, I mean, I could sign up for like 10 of them. I just don't want to manage them all. But a nice gambit is to take, Hilton, say, later second, mid to late second if he slips, and then take Luck. And then, if the Colts D is as bad as everyone thinks it's going to be and they get into a ton of shootouts, you've got sort of, maybe an eighth round pick in Luck and a, late second round pick in Hilton, or even maybe slips to the third. And you've got this major stack, right, of two players that can go off, and you still get, two top picks. So that's something. I'm not really a Moncrief guy. I used to be, but he's got the size and speed. But I just feel like he would have shown more by now if he was that guy. I know he's been a little banged up, but it doesn't explain why he's just never really developed. He's never really done it. And I just think he would have by now if he were going to. So I'm not very high on Moncrief, but I do think that the Luck is worth a gamble, especially with how bad that defense looks like it's going to be.
So Luck's another quarterback on the men. Other big news items was just some rare big name players being traded in the preseason. Sammy Watkins goes to the Rams. Jordan Matthews goes to the Bills. Take each player. How does that impact their value in their ranking?
I mean, everyone's been talking to this to death, but I mean, basically, Watkins is obviously got to downgrade him for a little bit worse environment, new system, new quarterback to get acclimated to. But for him, it's always health, right? So I don't downgrade him that much. And in fact, in the NFBC, he slipped like two full rounds almost. And I way rather take Sammy Watkins at his current price in his current situation than at his previous price in his previous situation. Because again, I think the main variable is not talent, it's health. And so that doesn't change. He's just as risky as he was, but now he's a lot cheaper. Maybe the reward is slightly less on the Rams, but I still like it. Jordan Matthews, I bumped way up because in Philly, he was losing the job to Nelson Agholor. They obviously had Alshon Jeffrey, Zach Ertz, Torrey Smith. There were too many guys there, so I had him way down. Then I bumped him way up because, hey, he may be the number one receiver in Buffalo, but now he's hurt, and it looks like kind of a serious injury. So it's like a chest fracture, but maybe it's just a chip fracture. So could be available for week one, but you don't want a guy in a new system already hurt. So I had to downgrade him again. But I had liked Jordan Matthews a little bit until that injury.
Yeah, I kind of like him. I mean, I kind of like them both, especially if their value, I mean, if their ADP and their value falls a whole lot, because they're going to be the main guys, right? I mean, they're like, could be the wide receivers, the only game in town. They're going to get lots of action, even if the offensive environment is a little bit of a downgrade.
Yeah, I agree. That's why I initially bumped him up and would take Watkins at his current ADP.
Okay, so those are kind of, to me, those are like the major news items that if you bought a magazine or something or you just weren't paying attention for the last month, which most of our listeners are, it's probably the case, those are the things you really got to key in on. If we're going to go, let's just talk overall rankings here. You've kind of mentioned it a little bit before. We obviously have the big three running backs. Now we have the big two with David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell, 1-2, pretty much no matter what format you're in. If we're talking PPR here and look at the PPR rankings on RotoWire, it's that algorithm. Then after that, you got the big three wide receivers, Antonio Brown, Odell Beckham, Julio Jones. Then after that, it starts getting a little, I think you can go lots of different directions. I think we'll see a lot of different combinations in drafts. You've got it currently as Freeman, McCoy, Melvin Gordon, Ajayi, and then AJ Green, Mike Evans, Jordan Howard.
Well, okay, so that's the algorithm doing that. Like, yep. If I'm drafting, I keep going on receivers. I go Jones, Green, Evans. Then I switch to the running backs.
Yeah. And you don't have Jordy Nelson in the – he got him as number 13, just beyond Green and Evans.
Yeah, again, I would just do it by position, like if you really want to get the real thing. So, like, if you look at the receivers, you know, Jordy Nelson's number six behind Mike Evans, and that's where I have him.
So, all right, so that's just kind of like the overall, and you talked a little bit about the first round before, but I just want to kind of, you know, go through it real quick. If we switch to quarterbacks, and we talked about the quarterbacks, talked about Luck, you know, obviously there's been a bunch of news. You actually have, at least the PPR rankings have, you have Brady ahead of Rodgers.
Yes.
Which, I mean, you know, obviously Brady, Rodgers, Breeze, you know, 1-2-3, pretty much any format. What's the case for Brady being ahead of Rodgers this year?
You know, I just have this thing feeling about Brady that just the way, you know, they won their fifth Super Bowl. They love to stick it to everybody. They run up the score. They don't take him out in blowouts like a lot of teams would. They don't stop throwing till at least midway through the fourth quarter. They will still throw for a touchdown up 30, which other teams don't do. And I kind of just have this weird feeling they're going to try to give him every record in the book just to, like, break everything. I know it's speculative, but look at the personnel. I mean, they have Gronk healthy. They didn't have Gronk most of the year last year. They've got Brandon Cooks. They haven't had a receiver like that since Randy Moss. Edelman is still there. They still have Malcolm Mitchell, who was surprisingly good as a rookie. Chris Hogan was good, and on a per-play basis, he was excellent. Dwayne Allen, who's a good pass catcher and blocker, is their backup tight end. They've got three running backs who can catch passes. Really, the only non-pass-catching running back is Gillislee, who I think is being vastly overrated. Belichick came out and said, you know, we want to have a lot of looks that are harder to read. We don't want to have a particular guy in the game where you know what kind of play we're running. So James White will get more carries. He's saying on early downs, he's going to mix it up so you don't see James White in there and think, oh, we know they're going to throw. But I kind of think their running game may be Brady throwing three-yard passes to the running backs or six-yard passes to Edelman or six-yard passes to Cooks that he takes for 12 yards. So I could see him throwing 650, 700 times. You know, Rodgers had such a great year, and obviously he does more with his legs, so that's a big edge for him. But on a per-play basis, he hasn't, you know, lit it up still last couple of years. The receivers are getting older, and I just think the Green Bay with the two draft pick running backs are going to run it a lot more than they did last year. They basically abandoned the run, and Rodgers just went crazy. It also coincided with their winning streak. But I have Brady narrowly above Rodgers. It's just if I'm drafting and I want to shoot for the fences, I just think Brady has that 50-touchdown season upside this season.
Well, we've certainly seen the Patriots put the pedal to the metal before with that kind of offensive psychology, so it could happen. Looking at your rankings, so after the big three, you got Cam Newton number four, Russell Wilson, Kirk Cousins, Andrew Luck, Mariota, Matt Ryan, Jameis Winston. That's your top 10. The one that stands out to me is Cam. He's at number four. If you look at the NFFC PPR 12 team, he's number 10. He's the 10th quarterback. You've got him a lot higher. What's the case for Cam as high as number four?
Well, first off, you'll look at, you know, where the number four guy goes to number 10. I bet there's a smaller difference in ADP between those guys than number four and number two.
Definitely.
Okay.
So like 50 to 80. So it's a little bit of a range, at least in the NFL, the one I'm looking at, but I get your point.
Right. Okay. And then secondly, Cam is the most mispriced player in all drafts this year. The ADP just got it wrong. You look at Cam, I think he owns two of the top seven QB fantasy seasons of all time. 2 years ago, he had like the third or fourth best of all time. Let's review what he did. 2 years ago, he had 35 touchdown passes and only 10 picks, and he had 10 rushing touchdowns, 636 rushing yards, 3837 passing yards. It was one of the best. It was the top three or four QB fantasy season of all time. And what changed last year? Well, he got hurt. Okay, that was one thing. Two, they played a first place schedule. That was another thing. This year, you know, he's coming back from the shoulder, but he looks healthier, and he's certainly not playing with any sort of handicap like he did much of last year. The year that he went crazy, they didn't even have Kelvin Benjamin. He was out with a torn ACL. Now Benjamin is 2 years removed from that injury. You've got Christian McCaffrey coming in. I said Ed McCaffrey, but his son. And going to add a lot of yards after the catch from the short passes. They drafted Curtis Samuel in the second round, so their first and second round picks were pass catchers. You got Devin Funchess in his third year. Reports are good. Who knows? We'll believe it when we see it. Greg Olson's back and healthy. So, and again, the last play schedule, you get the Saints twice. You get some good offenses in the division where there could be shootouts. This is, you know, Cam Newton is 28 years old, and he said, you know, I'm not going to stop running. He's not going to stop running. He doesn't intend to. And the fact, you know, last year it was him and Rodgers were 1-2. And I don't think anything has fundamentally changed about Newton. So I think that if you're getting Newton in with the 7th or 8th or 9th or 10th quarterback, it is a steal.
All right, so I talked about your top 10. You know, I'm a wait on the quarterback kind of guy. If it's a one quarterback league, I mean, it's so deep this year that, you know, there's quarterbacks in the 11 through 20 range that I'm fine with, you know, if I walk out of a draft with my team in week one. Who are your guys? I mean, who are your guys if you're waiting on the quarterbacks and you're beyond the top 10, 12?
I mean, Andy Dalton's my guy. I mean, I think Dalton should be a top 12 quarterback. He's not by ADP. You look at him, he's a guy who's had 7.8 YPA in the MVP discussion a couple years ago, still had decent YPA last year despite Green getting hurt, the passing game collapsing around him. You add John Ross, who runs a 4.22 40, the fastest 40 ever, to a healthy A.J. Green, and you still have LaFell and Tyler Boyd, who's taken the second round last year. You add Joe Mixon in with Gio Bernard, who's come back healthy. You add a healthy Tyler Eifert for the moment as we speak. He's not hurt. Maybe by the time this is posted, he'll be hurt. But he's healthy for now. This is great weapons, a good quarterback, and, you know, easily could be top seven, and he's getting drafted a lot later than that. So that's the guy I end up pivoting to if I end up, you know, waiting on QBs.
Yeah, he's 17th in the let's see, an MFL 12-team standard leagues. And, you know, I'm thinking when wait on the quarterback, it's more standard league, you know, scoring. My guy's Ben Roethlisberger, who – you know, you only have him, what, projected to win, to play, what, 13?
14 games. 14, yeah, 14. Games. Yeah.
So obviously on season-long rankings, he's going to take a big hit. But week to week, you know, he's still going to be, I think he could easily be top three, top five quarterback. All his weapons are back. When healthy, he's you know, one of the top, you know, three to five quarterbacks.
But he's expensive.
15 years.
What's his ADP? He gets drafted in the top 10, doesn't he?
I mean, I'm looking at, you know, a couple different systems here. I mean, in NFFC, he's going number, let's see, he's the 13th quarterback off the board.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, so that's not bad.
10th quarterback off the board. Excuse me.
Yeah. 10 gets a little expensive for him, in my opinion. He's been awful on the road for 3 years. So you really need to pair him with somebody. I mean, unless you think that's just a fluke, it's three full years. I mean, if you look at his home road splits, it's like as drastic as anything you've ever seen. All his production is at home. On the road, he's like Blake Bortles. I mean, it's like a guy, not even Blake Bortles without the running. I mean, he's been atrocious. Obviously, he doesn't run. He's been hurt so much, he's probably going to miss a couple games. He also thought about retirement. And I always get wary of a guy who probably should have retired, given the beating he's taken. And, you know, obviously, it's $14, $15 million. I don't know, he's getting paid a lot to come back. And if that's the motivation. Martavis Bryant's there, it's true. If you look at the projections for him and Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell's receiving projections, if they get anything from anyone else, Roethlisberger has to be a top 10 quarterback. But I am a little wary of him. But in a one, you know, in a 12-team, one QB league, sure, you can push him up into the top 10.
Yeah. I mean, give me the guy who's got the high per-game output. You know, unlike the Zeke situation, he's healthy now. He's going to play the first 6 weeks, you know, and I'll figure it out right later. You know, and unlike at running back, there's lots of stuff that you can go to the waiver wire to at least get a somewhat decent, you know, decent quarterback the rest of the way. So
and there's also an argument, you know, in a deep league with a deep bench like NFFC that home road split for Roethlisberger is a good thing, right? Like, you know, you're going to use him at home every time he's at home. And then if he's on the road, you just evaluate the matchup and pick up Andy Dalton or someone like that and use him, you know, in his place.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah, you can go any of those routes. I think it's viable in one quarterback league. All right. If we switch over to running back, we talked about David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell, rest of your top 10, Freeman, McCoy, Gordon, Ajay. Jai Howard, Murray, and then Elliott, and then Gurley. You know, obviously Elliott's really fallen a lot. Anybody else whose opinion you've changed in the last couple of weeks based on preseason action or training camp?
Well, I moved Fournette down for this foot injury that I think plagued him in college, I was told, and he wasn't quite as efficient in a senior, and is not a senior or whatever, his last year in college as he was in the previous year, and they said it was attributed to a foot injury. And that makes me a little nervous because you know, you don't want the rookie running back coming in with any kind of problem, and he's kind of day to day with it. They don't seem to think it's serious, but if it's a recurring thing, maybe it is. He didn't actually fall below Carlos Hyde because there's sort of a gap between the tiers, but that was just something I noted. Another guy I moved down was Jay Ajayi a little bit because I'm just nervous about the concussion. I mean, it's lasted a couple weeks. Usually NFL players, they get the concussion and they're back, you know, a week later, but that's not the case with him. And, you know, I moved up Dalvin Cook. Looks like he's probably going to take that job, even though Latavius Murray's coming back to practice. I moved down Joe Mixon a little bit because it looks like Hill and Bernard are not just going away. I moved up Rob Kelly. Samaje Perine really struggled. He fumbled, and he doesn't seem to be good at pass protection, and that's the kind of thing that kills the value of a rookie running back. So there's been a little bit of movement, not a ton, but a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, Mixon and Cook are really the two guys that I think are the big potential movers in the preseason, the rookies. They could get the job. I mean, Cook, the buzz on him early on has been that it's his job and he's going to take it and the coach loves it. It's only the first preseason game, but it was like the Vikings looked like the same old team as last year where they couldn't open any line at all, and he hardly got any rushing yards per attempt. And that's what I'm worried about with him, less so that he's going to get the workload, which I think he will. I think eventually he'll take over from the other guys. Mixon, though, the reports, is he really going to be the clear number one who's getting all the work, getting all the action? He seems like maybe a better talent, but I'm just wondering if he's going to get the workload in that offense. I mean, he's got some backups or viable competitors.
Yeah, the issue with him, I think, is he's so good that they're just going to kick those other guys to the curb. Like, some guys just break down the door and there's no going back. When Odell Beckham came into the league, Victor Cruz was there for a week before he tore his knee. But even if Cruz stays healthy, there was no going back once they saw Beckham. It was the same thing when Jake Reed and Chris Carter were starting at receiver for the Vikings and Randy Moss came in the league as the third receiver. It's like, he's going to kick down the door. So if Mixon is one of those guys, it ends up being like a transcendent, Adrian Peterson level back with pass catching ability, it doesn't matter. But if he's just good, then it does matter, right? Then those guys are there. Those guys aren't bad. Bernard's actually really good. Hill had a bad year last year, but it was that was the offensive line. He's a power runner. He's only in his third year or so, or fourth year. So it just really depends on, is Mixon the best running back in this class, or is he just a good running back? And that's going to make the difference.
Okay, so let's say you're going heavy wide receiver early on. You need to take some you need to take some running backs in the mid rounds. Who are your targets you're looking for?
Are we talking PPR or what?
Let's talk PPR. Why not?
Okay. Duke Johnson. Love Duke Johnson. Love the fact that he's lining up as a slot receiver and getting tons of targets. I mean, if you get a PPR running back to just have Cole Beasley's numbers, 70 catches, 75 catches, 800 yards, that's monstrous as long as he gets 50 plus carries. So I have Duke Johnson projected for 88 carries. You add that to a normal slot receiver's numbers, that's just a great pick. Ends up being a top 15 back at a much cheaper price. So that's one of them. Other guys, again, especially if I have an Elliott or I'm going zero running back or one running back and waiting on, loading up on receivers. I love the Theo Riddicks and Danny Woodheads for cheap. Woodhead's getting a little more expensive, so I may push him down. I mean, I may pass on him. But just any of those guys, just get your 10 points per game. Big deal. You're loaded at receiver. Matt Forte is another one. He's just one of those old warhorses they can't kill off. I still take Powell over him, but Forte is going so cheap. He's ostensibly still the starter in New York, and he's going to catch passes. So in a PPR, sure, why not? Going a little deeper, I want to gamble on Jamaal Charles. I mean, Jamaal Charles, 2 years ago, was going in the first round, mid-first round. And he plays one game, then he tears his knee. Okay, that's unfortunate. The next year he comes back, which is last summer. And he's going in the third round. He's coming off an ACL. It was during the season. It wasn't, a 12-month recovery. It was a 9-month recovery. And people are still taking him the third, fourth round. But then he's not really ready for training camp. Tries to go. Really can't get sidelined for the season again. Okay, that's bad. But it's not like he's lost it or he's done or he's a bad player. It's just he didn't really recover from the ACL and had to go back on IR. What if he's recovered now? What if the 2 years is what he needed and he feels like $1 million? I mean, there's no, C.J. Anderson is a decent back, but if you're getting something close to peak Jamaal Charles with one last go around, that's going to be the guy. So I love getting him in the 11th or 12th round. I just think it's a good value. And then you want to get as many guys as possible, like Donta Foreman. The guy, I don't trust Lamar Miller. Pick up Donta Foreman. I have some Jeremy McNichols. I don't think the Tampa backs are very good. Maybe McNichols will end up getting the job and be good. DeAndre Washington. I don't trust Marshawn Lynch. The only problem there is there's really two guys with Jalen Richard. You really prefer a situation where it's just one clear backup. So Robert Turbin's another one. I don't trust Gore to stay healthy or be any good, or even if he's healthy, he'll be just a total garbage. So maybe Turbin's the guy. Maybe it's Marlon Mack. But those are some backs I end up taking, in the 10th to 20th round in the NFCs.
Yeah, the only argument against Charles, and I would also say Marshawn Lynch, is just the career arcs for these running backs are so short, and I know that Charles had a longer career than most, But unlike baseball or some other sports where, you know, you take the guy who had the down year and his career slipped a little bit and then he's going to come back again. I mean, in football, it just, you know, when you're done, you're done, right? I mean, it goes away. And Lynch especially, I mean, if you're going to sit out a year or two, I just think, you know, in the NFL, missing a year and not being in football shape and all that kind of stuff, I just think, you know, that's just going to catch up to you pretty quick.
Well, he's going in the fourth round. I mean, that's a real, you know, I would never touch Lynch where he's going. I think it's crazy. But, you know, Charles is going in the 11th round. And so it's cheap. You know, the gamble is cheap.
That's true. The price is not going to cost you much. For myself, guys that I want to wait on, that I'm picking up, Kareem Hunt. I mean, he could, you know, all the buzz and everything like that seems to think that he could take over the job, you know, full time there. I like Marlon Mack. I love the guys there. Another buzzy guy in training camp. But, you know, I think that ultimately if Gore were to get hurt or really just fall off the table, he's more of a, you know, has more upside. I like Alvin Kamara. Is that his name? In the
yep.
Saints? You know, I mean, the Saints, he's got a whole bunch of other guys around him. He seems to be a PPR guy. They throw the ball a lot. Good buzz on him. He's not going to cost you much anything. Some of the Oakland backups, I mean, I don't really know. I mean, Jalen, was it Richard? I mean,
yep.
Showed a lot last year. I know he hasn't been getting as much buzz in the preseason. Those are some of the guys I'm loading up on. And, you know, my strategy is take wide receivers early, take a bunch in the middle, and then keep taking more running backs. So almost all my reserve players are running backs because, you know, running backs are scarce. And if one of these guys were to hit for whatever reason we talked about, whether it's injury or they just, you know, they busted down the door and they became the guy, and you've got good wide receivers, and suddenly, you know, Kareem Hunt and Marlon Mack becomes an every down player and he's getting, you know, goal line work and, 15, 20 carries a game. I mean, you've got a dominant team. So I try to load up on as many of those as I can. You can always jettison them, you know, week four or five when you need to pick up, you know, an injured tight end or, you know, tight end because your starter's injured or somebody on a bye week, that kind of stuff. So I try to load up on as many of these backups as possible.
Well, also, if you know, when you do these 20-round NFFCs, you start to realize that there's lots of backs you like in the 15th, 16th round, but there's no receivers you like, right? There's tons of backs you could see doing something. And so you always want to get like 7 or 8 of those guys, you know, just have a huge stable of possibilities. Receivers, just because a guy goes down doesn't mean anything. If Andre Johnson goes down, right, it's not like Jalen Strong or Braxton Miller is going to just – be Andre Johnson. Like, there's very little chance that they will be. But if, you know, Spencer Ware goes down, there's a good chance Kareem Hunt will be Spencer Ware. So you really want to, as you said, get solid receivers and then speculate on the backs. The backs, there's a much lower bar to clear to replace the starter than there is at receiver.
Yeah, I mean, it's because the volume is going to be there, and volume is so important to their...
volume, but also skill. Receiver just takes more skill, I think.
Right.
You know, you can't just replace the number one receiver with whoever's left.
Right.
You know, if Dez Bryant goes down, Terrence Williams does not become Dez Bryant, right? Like, nobody's going to be... They'll bump him up a little bit, but they're not going to be, like, scrambling all over themselves to get Terrence Williams the way they were with McFadden if Zeke were out for the whole year.
Yeah, and we see that reflected in the real NFL where they realize that they don't need to overpay for a guy that can just hit the hole, maybe like a fraction of a second less than somebody else. They can still get the job done, whereas the skills that it takes not only to be as tall and you know, as a red zone threat like Bryant, but also just the ability to, you know, run routes and, you know, all that kind of stuff and learn the plays and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's a unique skill that takes some training, and that's why we see sometimes wide receivers take 2 or 3 years before they're pretty good. Although that arc seems to be kind of shortening more and more as the NFL gets more and more wide receiver friendly. All right, well, let's switch to wide receiver rankings as long as we're on the subject. But before we do that, let's just have one more shout out to our sponsor here. Yahoo Fantasy Football. With Yahoo Fantasy Football, there are endless ways to feel the wins each week, whether it's a winning waiver claim, a winning piece of smack talk, or actually winning on the field. It's football in its funniest, best form, and where there's no such thing as excessive celebration. Yahoo Fantasy Football, feel the wins. Yahoo Fantasy Football is free to play and easy on desktop or mobile with the Yahoo Fantasy Sports app. Sign up today at rotowire.com/yahoo. The Yahoo Fantasy Sports app has been rated number one by the Fantasy Sports Trade Association 3 years in a row. It's got in-depth player and matchup analysis to help you fine-tune your roster each week. The app is just as extensive as the desktop experience, allowing you to draft, trade, and comb waivers right from your phone. Switch to the Yahoo, where you can manage your league dues for free. It's a cool new feature that I've checked out for some of my leagues. Yahoo Fantasy app messenger allows all the witty banter and smack talk your league can muster. So if you're not on Yahoo, give it a shot. A couple new features. They're absolutely good. I certainly use it for several of my leagues, so highly recommend it. All right, well, switching over to wide receiver rankings. We touched on it a little bit. We've kind of gone through a lot of them. PPR format here. You got Brown, Beckham, Jones, Green, Evans, Jordy Nelson, Dez Bryant. Talked about all those. Then Michael Thomas, Brandon Cooks, Amari Cooper, and then Hilton, who you said you've downgraded a little bit, and then Doug Baldwin. That's your top 12. One guy I think that you've been talking about that's kind of creeping up on you, at least you're taking a lot of shots on, is Brandon Cooks. I mean, if you think that Tom Brady's going to have this historic 50-touchdown season, is he where the upside, equally as much where the upside lies with the Patriots?
Yes, I think so, given the skill set and given how the Patriots operate. A lot of people think, well, there's no way Cooks is going to be huge because Julian Edelman will get 150 targets and Gronk will get 120. And then their backs will get, a few of them will get 60, 70 each. And then you got, Dwayne Allen and you got Chris Hogan and Malcolm Mitchell. There's only 100 targets there for Cooks. And if so, then Cooks will be basically DeSean Jackson. And I agree with that. I think that's the floor is DeSean Jackson, sort of that 1,000-yard, 100 targets, 7 touchdown type of guy. But let's look at the ceiling, right? Let's say Cooks running those short routes that Brady likes to get rid of the ball so quickly is way better than Edelman. And I think he is better than Edelman. He's 23. He runs a 4.33 40. Edelman is 31 and runs a 4.5 something 40, right? So Cooks is just so much quicker and faster and athletic, more athletic than Edelman. You really think the Patriots are going to say, oh, no, it's Edelman. He's been with us. We won 2 Super Bowls with him. We got to get him his targets. He's owed the targets. Is that how the Patriots operate? No, it's not. That's how a lot of teams operate, but not the Patriots. If Edelman has to return punts and play safety, I'm kidding about the safety, though he did that 6 years ago. But if he has to return punts and get 80 targets, then he'll return punts and get 80 targets. The Patriots will do what works. And if Cooks is just better, he's going to get the targets. And in preseason, he's looked great. And I think there's a real chance that Cooks gets 140-plus targets. And if they're Tom Brady targets with Cooks' skill set, add, think 10 yards a target, and you got up 1,400 yards right there, and then throw in 10 touchdowns. I mean, this guy could be Antonio Brown if he gets the targets that Antonio Brown gets. And I think there's a real chance that happens.
Now, Dez Bryant, I mean, how does the Zeke Elliott being suspended impact him? Is he going to get more looks? Are they going to have more of the passing game? Did you upgrade him?
I did not upgrade him. I was high on Bryant because he and Dak really clicked once Dez was healthy. Dez got something like 8 touchdowns in 8 games. I mean, not including week 17 where he played 2 snaps. He really took off. He had a good game against the Packers in the playoff game. I think he had 2 touchdowns. The thing with Dez, though, that started to worry me, and I don't want to overweight this, but Dez plays the worst slate of cornerbacks in the NFL this year. He gets Janoris Jenkins twice to the Giants, who played at a Pro Bowl level. He gets Josh Norman twice. He gets the Broncos in week 2. He gets Patrick Peterson in week 3. So, you want to talk about early season. He's getting Jenkins and then Aqib Talib and Chris Harris and then Patrick Peterson the first 3 weeks of the season. So, that's – can he overcome that? Maybe. He hasn't had a great track record playing against elite cornerbacks. Then again, he's been hurt a lot recently and was acclimating to a new quarterback. But I'm a little on the fence on Dez.
So I'm definitely warming up to him, especially non-PPR. Look at his last 3 seasons of 16 full games, and I realize health is a huge factor. Touchdowns, those 3 seasons, 12 touchdowns, 13 touchdowns, 16 touchdowns. I mean, that's pretty darn appealing. So, the volume may not be there, but I just wonder if he's going to be more the guy, especially for the first 6 weeks. Maybe that rhythm just keeps going. So,
well, also their D is bad, and they have suspensions and injuries to it too. So if their D is as bad as projected, they may want to run McFadden, but they may end up throwing a lot, and Dez may get the volume yet.
Yeah. Okay, so wide receiver. Let's say that we switch gears. You've taken a bunch of running backs. You're trying to pick off those mid-tier wide receivers to cobble together a decent wide receiver core. Who are you looking for then?
Yeah, I've been landing on John Brown in every draft. I just think John Brown he was compared to T.Y. Hilton and Marvin Harrison 2 years ago, and he had a year where he was sick. They seem to have at least temporarily treated his illness, and he seems like himself again. So I think he's being mispriced based on sort of a vague illness that people don't understand. I also have found myself landing on Tyrell Williams quite a bit. He was very efficient, very good last year. Mike Williams looks like he's out till at least October, maybe the whole year. Keenan Allen's always hurt. I think Tyrell Williams is a good investment. Adam Thielen has been slipping. It's your guy, Pete. Was very efficient and good last year. Stephon Diggs is there and people are drafting him like he's way better than Thielen. But last year, Thielen was actually better. So I don't really – I have him kind of closely ranked, but push come to shove, give me the guy who was actually better last year.
Yeah, I mean, Thielen just improved every year. He runs every route. I just think he's the better value, right? Because I think he could easily be the number one receiver there. Although, you know, I'm not super high on the Vikings offense, but somebody's got to get the targets. They're probably going to be throwing the ball a lot. So you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, you know, I don't like being in that. This is why I starting out with top wide receivers, because you know, boy, these when you talk about mid tier wide receivers here, they're just there's a lot of warts. You know, there's a lot of things I don't really like. You know, but I mean, I like Randall Cobb. He goes super cheap in a bunch of leagues. I'm not saying he's going to be good, but he was good at the end of last season. He could easily be the number two guy in the top offense in the NFL. And I know that everyone's really down on him, but who knows? I mean, I also like Davante Adams. I mean, he's another guy.
But he's not cheap. Davante Adams is expensive.
I know he's not cheap, but he's definitely that. If I'm getting pushed out of the, first tier or second tier, and he's kind of borderline second tier, I would say of wide receivers. He's someone I definitely look at. I mean, he could easily be the number one receiver on the number one wide receiver offense in the league. I mean, I know Jordy Nelson, is probably going to always be that guy, but it's not inconceivable that he could be just a tad below that. And so he's another guy that I've. Had on a bunch of rosters. I think I got him in the fourth round in the Vegas league, which is a non-PPR league, which is a little bit of a slip, but it was like I was fine going four wide receivers, taking him there because you could start him with the flex player. Those are some of the middle ones. What about your late, going late? What are your late picks?
Yeah, I mean, the problem, there's no good late wide receivers. I mean, that's the thing, because you're just hoping to get lucky, and then you never know when to start him. But Kenny Golladay just blew up the other day. He's going to get a little more expensive. Two touchdowns in the preseason. The Lions don't really have a red zone guy. They were thinking it might be Ebron, but he's already hurt. So Galladay's kind of interesting. I really liked Marquise Lee, but he got hurt now, and he's now iffy for week one. So I'm going to sort of downgrade him and cross him off my mental list. I like John Ross. Looks like he's fully practicing. They took him like top five pick, top seven pick. And, again, 4.2 240. When a lot of those guys who get taken in the early first round at receiver, they get 800-900 yards, 6-7 touchdowns their rookie year. They use those guys. And I'm not sure, Brandon LaFell or Tyler Boyd is a serious impediment. So I kind of like John Ross late. I've been sort of throwing a dart at Devin Funchess now and then. One of the Jets receivers like Ardarius Stewart, someone's going to catch passes there. I did like Anunua a little bit before he went out for the year. So those are just a handful of guys I'm getting. But again, I don't really, Breshad Perriman is more expensive, but I do like him. Corey Davis. I just like guys with the physical tools to have upside. Kevin White, even though he looks like he's not really a football player, just an athlete, I'll take a shot at him. But receivers are so tough because even if you are right about them, your timing might be off. There was one year I loved Miles Austin and I drafted him as a reserve, and he did nothing for 4 weeks, so I cut him when I had a bye week. And the next week someone picked him up and he went off and he was like the number two receiver the rest of the season. And so it's just very hard to time those guys. They have to be good right away and stay good, like Michael Thomas last year or something. Otherwise, you're probably not going to use them in a lot of their big weeks, and you're probably just going to drop them actually before you even get to use them.
Yeah, I mean, when you take wide receivers early in the draft, you get the mental piece of being able to just stick them in each line and not just second guess yourself all season long when you're trying to mix and match wide receivers. Alan, what about Allen Hurns? I mean, it was only, 2 years ago. I mean, I know, Bortles is terrible or whatever, or that's a big, part of it, but he's a 1,000-yard receiver, 10 touchdowns. And
I'm out on Hurns unless Lee's ankle injury. I mean, it turns out he's kind of like week to week. I think Lee passed him in terms of like who's the guy they want to get the ball to. And then you have Allen Robinson there as kind of a target hog, and now they want to run the ball and play defense. So I was kind of out on Hurns. But if Lee were hurt or Fournette's banged up and they can't run the ball, then Hurns would be back in play.
Yeah, the other guy, I do like Moncrief. I know that you downplayed him earlier in the podcast. But, yeah, I mean, hurt last year. It's a shoulder injury. He should be fine, although he kind of dinged up his opposite shoulder this preseason. But, seven touchdowns in nine games. If Luck's coming back, his price is – let's see, he was going for in the sixth round earlier in the preseason. In the summer in July, now he's down to the eighth round. I'm sure he's going to keep falling. I like him. Just give me the number two target in Lux passing game if Luck's healthy, and I think he could have a good season. So I own him on a lot of rosters. I'll keep buying. I'm a believer.
I don't know who it's going to be, right? Let's say the Colts D is awful. Luck comes back week one or two, gets 600 attempts, and it's a passing game you want a piece of. I mean, are you really buying Jack Doyle, you know, Eric Swoop? I mean, who is it, right? I mean, everyone thinks it's got to be Moncrief because there's just no one else after Hilton. But, you know, could Philip Dorsett have a pulse? Could he reemerge at some point? You know, Kamar Aiken, I just don't know. I feel like Luck could have a big year, and then somebody has to beat it on the other side of those passes besides Hilton. But I just can't – I don't want to just take Moncrief just because I can't figure out who else that would be.
Yeah, I think Moncrief, to me, and I've seen it, he's been inconsistent, but he's had flashes, right? So I think he could put it together if it all works out. We touched on tight ends. Let's switch over to tight end rankings. You know, usually most years it's kind of like go Gronk or go home, right? And don't take anybody at the top of the tight end. Is that how it's panning out this year? I mean, it's Kelce and Gronk, and then wait forever, or are you just waiting for tight ends?
No, I love Jimmy Graham. I think Jimmy Graham. I've got a lot of shares, and I almost think, you know, I have Kelce first in full PPR just because he's going to get so many targets. But in non-PPR, I could see taking Graham over Kelce and just under Gronk. I mean, Graham lost 20 pounds. He says he feels so healthy finally from his very serious knee injury he had a couple of years ago. He was good in the second half last year. They're saying that, Darrell Bevell says he wants to get more red zone looks to Graham. If you look at the other Seahawks receivers, it's like Baldwin, Lockett, Paul Richardson just got banged up. They're like 5'10". You know, Jermaine Kearse is 6 feet, 6'1", and he sucks. There is no red zone target there except Graham. Graham is 6'7". He scored 16 touchdowns one year for the Saints. I think Graham is going to have a big year. Graham is probably a top five all-time receiving tight end. Can't block either, which is good. He's just out there to run routes and catch touchdowns. I just think he almost can't fail if he's healthy with Russell Wilson as his QB. The other guy I'm really high on, and I'm higher than everybody else, is Hunter Henry. Hunter Henry, I think he led the league with 8 touchdowns last year, despite having like 50 targets. I want to look at the exact numbers. He tied with, I think, Cameron Braid for 8 touchdowns on 53 targets. Okay. Rookie tight ends almost never do anything. This guy got 9 yards a target and 8 touchdowns on 53 targets, was excellent as a rookie. And last year they had the problem that Gates was there and they needed to get Gates the record, and there was all this stuff. Gates is still there, but he's 36. I think he's pretty much done. You already lost Mike Williams, the other big red zone guy. Keenan Allen's injury prone. Philip Rivers is a good QB. The rapport supposedly is really good between him and Henry in camp. I love Hunter Henry. I feel like if he stays healthy, he almost can't fail either.
Yeah, so your rankings are Kelce, Gronk, Graham, Olsen, Reed, Hunter Henry you mentioned, Kyle Rudolph, Zach Ertz, Tyler Eifert, Marcellus Bennett. Ertz, I mean, with the trade, you know, is he going to, is he going to get more love there? Or you think it just doesn't impact his value at all?
I don't think so. It's funny about Ertz is like he was really a bust last year. He went 13 for 139 and 2 TDs in week 17. Right? To take that away from his season-long stats. He only had 2 TDs all year besides that.
Yeah, I think the second year in a row he was like a playoff monster and kind of regular season nothing.
Yeah, well, he wasn't, you know, only if your playoff counted week 17 was he a playoff monster. And he went 2 for 33 the week before, so you could have been forgiven for benching him for some random guy.
Yeah.
I mean, Ertz, you know, he's had enough of a body of work the last 3 years to put him in the top 10, but I'm never excited to draft him.
Yeah, me neither. There always seems to be way more buzz than actual production, and I don't know if it's going to necessarily change this year. I found myself waiting on tight ends a lot, not paying up for the big guys, and kind of being pretty happy with what I ended up with. Jack Doyle, you talked about him before. He's another player who's improved every year. If Luck's back, I think he could take another leap. I'm fine with going with a guy like Austin Hooper in Atlanta, who I think could see his role grow. There's just a lot of tight ends that I don't mind, you know, sort of picking among the bargain bins at the end of the draft.
I mean, the fact that everyone only needs one tight end, and if you have a good one, you're not really looking for a second unless it's a deep league like NFFC where people do stash multiple ones, you'll find one. I like Hooper's upside a lot. I mean, his floor is zero. His floor is not guaranteed at all, but the ceiling is really high when you think that Mohamed Sanu, Taylor Gabriel weighs 150 pounds. I mean, there's really nobody after Julio Jones in that offense, and you have Matt Ryan as the QB. There's a lot of upside if Hooper can emerge.
Yeah. So the other guy, and Eric Swoop with the Colts, if Luck is healthy, he's my super, super sleeper. But we'll see. Only 2 tight end leagues. Was he really warranted? Maybe he'll be the guy that emerges from the Colts offense if Moncrief is a huge bust. Let's go two tight ends all the time. All right, well, then what about – and then kicker-wise, we don't spend a lot of time on anything besides those big four positions, but, you've got a kicker strategy this year. I think every league I've been in with, you've taken the greatest kicker of all time, right?
Yeah, I was dumb, actually, in the stake league because the scoring – I thought about it afterward – is not that friendly to kickers. But if you're in those 3-4-5 scoring, which seems standard these days, 3-for-30 – 4-for-45 for a 50-yard field goal. I think Tucker is worth, when you get in the 13th round, go ahead and take him. I mean, yeah, you're passing on one of the many sleeper running backs, another of which will be there the next round and the next round. But you're getting a guy that not only kicks, 35, 37 field goals a year, he almost never misses. He's always doing from long distance. I think he was 11 for 11 or 10 for 10 from 50-plus last year. And the team plays around his skills. They know they have the greatest kicker of all time. When it's 4th and 7, at the 37-yard line, they're not going for it. They're not punting. They're kicking the field goal. A lot of teams just aren't going to try a 56-yard field goal. So that is something that is a big advantage, and I think he's worth it. I think Tucker's worth it.
Yeah, my comment. If you look at experts and our ADP and rankings and all that kind of stuff on kickers, I mean, they're terrible. And it's just like there's just no.
But that does not prove that this is a fallacy that's common. It's saying like on average, this is the case, right? Like on average, nobody can predict kickers. I say that's true. Okay. But at the extremes, that's what you got to look at. On average, human beings are more or less all about 6 feet, men, but like fine on average, but like there's still 7-footers and 4-footers. I mean, like there are extremes that are so far from what the average says. And I think that if you're dealing with the greatest kicker of all time on a team that's going to try the most field goals in the league, you can't look at what on average, people's track records are.
Yeah, that's true. But I would say I would even argue that it's even if you took like the top three kickers, where do the experts, are they able to
get top one? Sometimes
one even. Goskowski, sometimes every year is supposed to be the greatest kicker ever, but what did he finish?
Well, he did fine last year. Goskowski, if you drafted him, a few rounds early, that would have paid off. Yeah,
most of yours wasn't, but I forget where he ranked last year. I'll have to do some math, but it didn't end up paying off. But nevertheless,
Goskowski, he only had 27 field goals, which is a little bit above average, but not much. But he had he had 46 extra points. He was good. You're right. He probably wasn't worth taking in the 14th round or something.
Yeah, I mean, he finished in the top like three kickers every year, and it was just like it's a no brainer. You can take him every year, and then last year he didn't. I mean, so it's like
right. But I mean, look, he had a 4-year run where he definitely belonged in the top kickers, if not the top. And I mean, what running back has a 4-year run? What wide receiver has a 4-year run? I mean, yeah, he 1 year he finally didn't pan out. Now I know there's much less reward for taking Gus for being right about Goskowski than a running back, but you're also paying a 14th round price in terms of reaching for him, whereas you're paying a first round price if you reach for the wrong running back.
Yeah. I mean, you're not advocating taking Tucker in like the 8th round or something like that. So,
I think 12, 13, when you start to get to the point where those backup running backs are kind of fungible and you have a list of 12 of them, all of whom you just want a bunch, you just want a few of those guys. So if any one of them pans out, whether it's Jalen Richard or DeAndre Washington or Jeremy McNichols, and they're all basically the same, and go ahead and take Tucker. And I think Goskowski is the second one and has a little bit of a reason. I know he was a little down last year, but better in the second half. And the Patriots are one of those rare teams where you're going to get a floor of 50 extra points. So, that's just something also. But Tucker's the guy I'm really going after.
Yeah, and just don't reflexively in your drafts, at the end of the draft, you run out of names, so you just start taking the kickers and defense. No, take the long shots. To me, it's worth it. If you've got some theory like you do on certain kicker or defense, fine. Go with your hunch. If you've done your research, it's worthwhile. You're not taking them in the 7th round. We're talking about, last few picks of your draft makes sense. But, my thing is always to beginners and even more veterans, just, when you run out of names in your cheat sheet, don't just say, fine, screw it, I'll take the, whatever top defense or kicker is. It's still not worth it. It's always better to go, go with an extra guy that could pay off massively if you get a backup running back, like we've talked about in the running back section.
So take the defense or kicker.
Yeah. So that's it. Okay, so that's it pretty much for our rankings. We kind of recapped everything. Any other advice, really, for based on the draft season or just generally to people who are about to draft their teams?
My biggest advice is don't worry about ADP. Don't worry about where guys slot. Don't worry about what other people think, right? Most of you guys who are listening to this are not total beginners. Right? Most of you guys have played for a few years. It's 2017. It's not 1998. And you know football pretty well. Take the guy you want to take. Don't think that because this guy's ADP is somewhere in the third round, that late second is an unacceptable point to take him, even if he's by far your best player in your mind and your opinion on the board. Don't let the market limit the scope of what's permissible in your draft. Take the guys you want to take. That's what I would say. It's fantasy football. It's supposed to be fun. You know, don't be just a ridiculous homer and take picks way, way ahead just because they're on your favorite team. But if your pick is based on your own observations as a football fan and fantasy owner from previous seasons and what you've read, go ahead and take the guy you want. I cannot strongly emphasize that enough.
Yeah, I agree. The phrase you don't want to really ever utter in fantasy football is, I had to take him. I felt like I had to take him. He was there.
Right.
It was like, no, you don't have to take him. Take who you want to take. I mean, you'll feel much better about your team. And from my experience, it usually pays off. All right, that's it. Thanks again to our sponsor, Yahoo Fantasy Football. Go try him out. Rotowire.com/Yahoo. Definitely highly recommended. And let's maybe we'll try and do this one more time in the preseason, but hopefully we helped out with your drafts. All right.